This week, illustrious brother Austin Schifrin from the Valley of Pittsburgh comes on to share some wisdom. He's the author of the upcoming book, More Light, Collected Masonic Writings from 2017 to 2021. What's the difference between ethics and etiquette? What makes a gentleman? We'll get to these questions and a whole lot more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 537. Right away, let's thank the producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the program who have assisted us in making this podcast since July of 2011. I want to give a big thanks to the folks who put on Grand Masonic Day. Brother Troy, if you're listening, thank you so much for the invite, and to the rest of the panelists who I was there to speak with virtually. It was just a fantastic experience to be able to answer questions and listen to the perspectives of those brothers. So I understand the event was a massive success. I have been working on a super special secret project that'll be revealed just here in a few months. We're working on it. I think we'll reveal it at Esotericon, most likely. So keep your eyes peeled for information about that. Also, I want to thank everybody who's been following and asking questions and stitching the videos and things on TikTok. I'm on TikTok doing kind of behind the scenes for the show, podcasts, and tarot and masonry. And you can certainly find me there if you search for The Wizard of Orange. It's kind of a title my wife came up with after a friend of mine decided he was going to transliterate RJ as Arge. So kind of funny. But anyway, it's a lot of fun. We're trying to release content just all the time and reviewing tarot decks again and getting insights into behind the scenes of making a Masonic podcast, things I'm working on, sharing updates with cool projects and things that you might be interested in. So thanks again. Now we're taking a little break from the Whither Are We Traveling series. This week we've got an author on, as you heard in the top of the program, and it's a great interview, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's get right into it right now. All right, everybody, we're back, and this week we are so lucky to have illustrious brother Austin Schifrin from the Valley of Pittsburgh coming on the show to talk about a upcoming book project that he has just finished. Brother Austin, thanks for coming on the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Oh, and if I may, I wanted to congratulate you on your AMD appointment as well.
Hey, thanks so much. Yeah, it's a big honor to represent the AMD, and of course, the AMD being a great national body, it's a lot of fun, and I really enjoy it. So thanks very much for that.
More than welcome.
To give our audience a little bit of a background on yourself, can you tell us a little bit about where you come from Masonically, why you joined Masonry, and how you led up to what you're doing right now?
Certainly. I appreciate your asking. The story also does come up in its own way in the book, but certainly for the benefit of the listeners right now, I grew up in New York City, and by the time I was in high school, because of some conversations I had had with my grandfather, who I admired and respected a great deal, and I knew was an intellectual, kind of a seeker of esoteric knowledge, I knew that he had been a member of the Masons. And I know that this is an element of my story that I bear in common with some other brethren. I approached him to ask him a little bit more about it. I wasn't sure whether I was the right age to be pursuing such a thing. I wasn't sure what other kind of requirements there were. But I said, hey, I know that you belong to this organization, and it's something I'd like to know more about if you're allowed to tell me. And he said, well, Freemasonry is, first and foremost, a fraternity, and you're about to go away to college. Why don't you go have your college experience and see what fraternities are like. And if that is something that interests you, then you should come back to me to discuss it, and we can talk about that further. And I think it was said with the best of intentions, but I think that my grandfather did not realize how much the Greek letter fraternities on the college campus had changed in the 60 years since he had been in school. So I went away to college, and I had some very enjoyable experiences with fraternities, but, it was kind of more of a rowdy, kind of fun and frolic kind of situation. And I said, well, this is all very entertaining, but not something I feel like I necessarily need to pursue as a larger part of my life. So I never ended up discussing it much further with him. And you fast forward quite some time. I'm going to say, about another 10 or so years. And I had been living in Pittsburgh for a while. I had come to Pittsburgh for college and then stayed thereafter. And I was living in an area of Pittsburgh that's just generally referred to as the South Side. It's at the time, it was very colorful, had a bunch of nightlife. And I got to know a lot of the business owners up and down the main drag of the South Side. And one of them I became closer friends with, a fellow by the name of Eric Cohen, who owned the Carson Street Deli. And because of the nightlife in this neighborhood, there were always flyers up everywhere for all sorts of rock shows. That was pretty common. But one day, I'm walking past his deli, and among all these rock band flyers, I see one flyer that says, "Come out to our social event. Eat hoagies, watch the Pro Bowl football game, shoot pool," and it's sponsored by like five or six Masonic organizations with all of their little seals and sigils. And I'm looking at that, and I'm like, that's an unusual flyer. And I walked into the deli, and I found my buddy Eric, and I said to him, "Can you tell me anything about that unusual flyer in your window?" And he says, "Oh, I'm so glad that you asked. I have been a member of the Masons for 5 years now, and it's something that I really enjoy and care about. And so we're hosting this social for people to, for existing members to get to spend time together, and for people who are interested to get to meet us and know us." And I explained to him the experience I had had with my grandfather and that kind of nagging feeling I had that something had gotten lost in translation. And he said, "Well, why don't you come out and meet the guys?" And coming into this event, I just didn't know what to expect. I was thinking to myself, is this going to be like the Stonecutters episode of The Simpsons, a bunch of guys sitting in a smoky back room running the world? And I got there and I realized it was just a bunch of nice, ordinary guys, but also kind of a wide mix. So there were fellas who were like attorneys and college professors, and there were fellas who like worked on appliances and like fixed utility lines, but they were all just a nice bunch of guys. And I said, "Oh, this is something I'd like to be involved in." And I approached Eric and pursued it further. And in 2006, I joined my Blue Lodge out in Lower Burrell, Pennsylvania, Tyrian number 644. That's how it all began.
You know, it's not often you hear a story similar to this. I mean, a lot of us, I think, we go on the internet and we look for a lodge and we make some contact and there's delays or there isn't. You know, who knows how fast things move along. But generally speaking, it's either that or we knew somebody or our uncle said, "Yeah, come with me to the lodge meeting tonight." And, you know, then they fill out the darn petition for you and everything. It's quite interesting that you were more of an outgoing person who asked about the thing. You know, you saw a flyer and you got interested that way. I had to laugh because as I'm reading some of your biography that was written for the book, I laughed because I thought, you know, this is so kind of cool because you're a very eclectic individual. If you don't
mind, that is one word for it, yes.
I will say that. So I grew up in Southern California. So let me just tell you that, you know, I'm 40 years old. I'm from Southern California originally. So things like, I don't know how you feel about Vespas, but I see scooter club. Okay.
And then they're lovely machines. I was more of a Lambretta man myself, but okay. Vespas are pretty in their own right.
And I see that. So you were singer in a ska band, and I'm like, you know, I used to play in bands myself. So I just thought this was really kind of cool and really neat to get you on the program, and especially the eclectic nature. You know, your background is more of an outgoing kind of background. I don't know a whole lot of people in the Masonic scene, you know, who are actually extroverted enough to do things like, you know, be in bands or those kinds of things. So I think that's probably led to some great experiences on your part.
It truly has. But, you know, I have to come back to the notion that has been a pleasant and ongoing surprise for me, just the diversity of the types of guys that you meet in the fraternity. And surely it's true that there are some introverts. And there's, you know, there's more outgoing fellas. There's the guys who, you know, look forward eagerly to the biannual Scottish Rite reunion and getting to get on the stage, and, you know, and put on a costume and do their bit. There's, you know, people who you know, are more athletes. There are people who are more musicians. So while I do like to consider myself uncommon and unique, I also am so pleased to know I'm not even the only odd duck out there, for sure.
That's totally humble of you. So we'll leave it at that. I did want to ask, that brought you into the Blue Lodge. When did you join the Scottish Rite?
Oh, that might be a story that has more in common with more fellows out there, because my buddy Eric, I should point out, I miss him a great deal. We lost him to colon cancer about 4 years ago. And he was kind of a giant in the fraternity in this neck of the woods. And among his various strengths and characteristics, he was also a curious seeker of further knowledge and more light. So he's one of them kind of fellas who was curious to get involved in a wide variety of appendant bodies, and I sort of wound up following in his footsteps. So I got my first degree in Blue Lodge in June, and it meant that I had a little bit of downtime over the summer to learn my oath and so forth. But the timing worked out such that I got my second in September and my third in October. And I just remember Eric saying, well, gee, you know, this timing is so fortuitous because the Scottish Rite Valley is having a reunion in November. And let me tell you more about that organization. And, you know, maybe you should consider, you know, joining that as a next step. And I said, okay. Over the course of time, I wound up joining Scottish Rite after I had finished my year presiding as Sovereign Prince in 2014. I wound up joining the Shrine. I eventually wound up joining Chapter and Council in York Rite. I wound up joining the Tall Cedars and one or two other interesting appendant branches. But it's because I think the thing that drove me the most is my interest and love of ritual. Right. So the idea that the different branches each have their different focus of legend and lore, their ritual, their symbolism, and I have a bottomless appetite. You know, you made me think of one other topic, and I hope you don't mind me going backwards for a moment.
Not at all.
It was interesting that you brought up the whole introvert versus extrovert kind of thing. And I know I might have bypassed the topic because you asked me how I wound up getting involved with the writing. I've always enjoyed writing from a younger age, kind of in my green and naive youth. I was more into writing poetry. I then wound up writing lyrics. I did a lot of journaling. When you are moving through the officer line in Scottish Rite out here, they ask you to write for our magazine. And I had positive enough feedback from the membership that after I was done in my presiding year, the editor, PJ Roop, had asked if I would be nice enough to stay on and continue writing. And that was certainly enough encouragement for me. He didn't have to ask twice. So I've contributed to the magazine since then. And I've been kind of daydreaming of being able to put out a book, a collection like this, for a couple of years now. But, you know, it's funny, this push and pull of having some faith and confidence in yourself and then the attendant anxiety about, you know, gee, is there going to be any real demand for this? Are people going to be excited? Will they want it? So I only hope that I am putting something out into the world that people are going to find stimulating, educational, and that'll leave them wanting more.
I think they will. You have a number of essays in the book, and for our listeners out there who are curious about the type of content in the book, it is a collection of essays and things that had been originally published in the Right Now publication over the course of 4 years, 2017 to 2021, and the book is called More Light. The description of the book, it says, the book delivers a collection of the author's articles from Right Now, the magazine of the Scottish Rite Valley of Pittsburgh, along with a history of Freemasonry. Now, let me stop there. When you say that you deliver a history of Freemasonry, some would argue that having a history of Freemasonry in almost every book on Masonry can become tedious and sometimes unnecessary. However, something caught my eye in the description here, and it says, whether you're a Mason looking to expand your knowledge of the craft or a curious member of the general public looking for the right volume to make your first foray into an otherwise daunting subject, which Masonry certainly is, this book is for you. Are you actually going into the history of Freemasonry per se, or are you looking at more of a broad stroke history of Masonry? What was your take on this?
Thank you for asking. So my take on this was to approach the notion of the history of Freemasonry from three different levels, right? One level was just my personal history in experiencing the different bodies and branches in Freemasonry. So, you know, in the course of, gosh, I don't want to mangle this number, but in the course of, you know, a decade or so, I came to encounter these different branches and was intrigued by them and joined them. And so it becomes part of my personal history. At this stage in my life, I was going through this and I experienced this and I pursued this. But then from there, I'm telescoping out to say, globally, this body has its origins in this series of events. And, you know, maybe not going into it at a level of detail that would stretch out considerably, but just kind of to give an overview at the global level. Then I did a little further research because, after all, this was for the Squirrel Hill Historical Society. I did a little further research to say, then this is the history of this body in this particular stretch of Pennsylvania over here in our little western nook, right? So I attacked this at three levels. In the course of my personal history, I encountered this Masonic body and joined it. Then at the next level, globally, this body's history begins with this sequence of events, and then more locally, this body developed in Pennsylvania generally, or Pittsburgh in particular, starting at this location with this group of men. So I think even a person who has encountered a survey history of Freemasonry before will find stuff in that presentation that they were not already familiar with.
That's great. It sounds like it's very fresh. It's kind of a unique perspective, which is what we're all about. Something else I wanted to ask you about actually is in one of your essays. So I'm an avid Masonic reader myself, and on the program, you know, of course, we read Masonic papers that have spanned the gamut in years from, you know, from the 1700s all the way to today. And you sent over a couple of extracts from the book. The first one that you sent over is called A Matter of Refinement. And I think it's a fantastic piece. Both of the ones that you sent over were great.
Thank you.
But you actually made a couple of interesting points here on A Matter of Refinement. So in the world of talking about making refinements or making a good man better, you have this term gentleman, and you talk about Masonry and gentleman together. And so often we kind of, I don't know, mentally visualize the gentleman of Victorian era of some sort, you know, the Masons to look like this, mm-hmm. or, you know, maybe the top mm-hmm. hat or whatever the case is. And, you know, maybe there is the modern version of the gentleman, but something that you get into here besides the gentleman is you talk about, well, number one, I love that you bring in ethics and civics to the conversation. But something that I thought was interesting is your comparison of ethics or etiquette. Is something ethics based or is it etiquette? Can you talk a little bit about why you focused on that? Not to say like it was too acute of an angle, but I just thought it was a really unique perspective to start to talk about this topic.
Sure, I don't mind at all. I mean, I just thought it was an intriguing thing that, you know, I kind of couldn't get out of my head. This idea that there's behaviors and conduct that we might consider gentlemanly, but the question is like, what is your motivation? Do you do it because it's just considered polite, and this is what's commonly done? Is it custom, or do you do it because it's the right thing? It's almost like somebody making that distinction between is he nice or is he good? And the fact of the matter is, you could, if you wish, you could take the position and make the argument that the end justifies the means. So if it betters the world around him and helps society, and it happens to make him, you know, look like a better man, then the conduct has served its purpose, whether it is because it was a point of ethics or a point of etiquette. But I guess I've always thought that the unexamined life is not worth living, right? So, if we can turn the spotlight of analysis on this, I think it should give us some more insight. You know, why do we think that it's important for us to inculcate in our children to say please and thank you? Maybe it's not obvious enough except in its absence. And the first time you hear your child demand something out of somebody else, and you flush with embarrassment, you realize how wrong it sounds. But is that etiquette? Is it just because it's the quote-unquote proper thing to do? Or do we tell them that they must say these things because, in fact, that this is what good conduct is? And I think it's a distinction worth examining, that's all.
I think this is really an interesting concept because there's a lot of Masonic books that come out that get published. And let's be honest, I mean, some stuff is pretty willy-nilly. And what I do appreciate in this is there is something that you're doing here that I think lends some fresh air, as it were, to the Masonic reading that people can find themselves wrapped up in. And that is this. You have, whether you know it or not, you're almost taking what some would consider an archaic form of, like, philosophical debate that a small number of people, probably myself included, enjoy. Like, I will love to sit down with you and have some Cokes or whatever, some coffee, and couch philosophize ethics and etiquette for 10 hours. Like, I don't care. Like, that this is a good exercise. I find
that sounds like a nice evening to me.
Yeah. So, but what you're doing here actually is you're almost taking this sense of the philosophy engagement, and you're kind of putting it into a practical terms for somebody today. So this is, it's only been done. I mean, the idea of practical masonry has started to emerge as more people go, wait a minute, what does this mean for the real world? And I think you've done that here. And what I like is that you actually are presenting things in a way that makes the reader think. So kudos to you on that.
You know what? I mean, at this point, I almost feel like if nobody else runs out and picks up the book, I will already feel somewhat justified in my accomplishment here because I have been an admirer of your program and the emphasis that you place on Masonic education, and not just the emphasis that you place on it, but kind of your conception of what it could be. So I'm certainly grateful for your feedback. It warms the cockles of my heart.
Absolutely. So you talk about class distinction, and it says the class distinctions of the 13th century in the United Kingdom are not our present reality. And the Freemasons of today are not those of yore. What we mean when we say gentleman today, right, in a practical sense, is a civilized, educated, sensitive, or well-mannered man. And your Blue Lodge is a fine place to acquire these qualifications. How do you feel when, like, this is a position that you've written about? And what about the argument that people say, Freemasonry doesn't exist to teach you how to be educated or how to civilize you or to be well-mannered, right?
Like, well, I mean, we look, say I'm not going to claim to have a monopoly on the truth. I will say, for instance, that a person could be justified in making the argument that you just stated in much the same fashion as we trot out that old chestnut that Freemasonry takes good and takes good men and makes them better, right? And while that's a gross overgeneralization, we can say that since we should be seeking out men who are good already, you know, or we hope that men who are good already will be seeking us out, that maybe Freemasonry does not need to bear the brunt of the responsibility of refining men. And that is an okay stance to take. But what I will say is, as past master at my TO lodge, Ad Lucem number 812, is fond of saying, you know, iron sharpens iron, right? So you have a tendency to take on some of the mannerisms and characteristics of the people that you choose to surround yourself with. I might start out as a intellectual and well-spoken fella, but the more time I spend among peers who are more lowbrow or crass, the more I'm going to express myself the same way. Even if somewhere inside me, the intellectual is still lurking, force of habit and the way that social animals behave means that I'm going to start mimicking those characteristics. But if I proactively choose to be cautious and try to surround myself with other people of good character and that gentlemanly conduct, it's going to reinforce the same behaviors in me. So whether or not we choose to lay all of the responsibility for refining men on Freemasonry. Surely we can say it's a good ecosystem for the our better angels to be reinforced.
I really like this answer because I feel that, you know, all the time, iron does sharpen iron, and you can find yourself, you know, in the locker room, dumbing yourself down sometimes.
Right? Without even realizing that you're doing it, but then correct. You realize you're doing it.
One of the things that I think you do in this particular piece that I also caught on to was you mentioned these three ideas, right? The idea of civilized, educated, sensitive, or well-mannered. And we know what civilized is, hopefully. We know what educated is. But something that you did tackle, and I thought it was, brave in the sense that you had tackled the idea of sensitivity. You say it's a loaded term, and certainly it is. But in Freemasonry, we know that the terms that we are using in the profane world aren't necessarily or don't necessarily have the same weight or general meaning as they might within the fraternity. And when you say, today as men, we may fear being labeled sensitive, right, to assume it being feminine or effeminate quality, we may even attribute political overtones to it, you correct course here by saying, if sensitivity can be constructed as empathy for your fellow man, then undoubtedly we must learn sensitivity. And I thought this was, if there was a favorite line in this particular piece, I really loved that sentence. And I loved it because it's the thing we are called to do, Austin, right? Like, we are supposed to celebrate with our brothers. We're supposed to cry with our brothers. We're supposed to find out if they got the job, and if they did, buy them a Coke or a beer or whatever they want. You know what I mean? And having this kind of empathy is so important. And I love that you put a fine edge here.
Thank you so much. And, as I sit and listen to your reaction to it, I bear in mind that perhaps I should gird my loins for the possibility that I might get reactions from folks who are less receptive or might be taken aback by the notion that someone with less years in Freemasonry than they have might, like myself, presume to know what the quote-unquote real point of Freemasonry is. This, again, I think goes to that whole notion of balancing out one's confidence as an author with, a certain hesitation and humility that says, look, I know that I've been at this long enough and studying it, deeply and carefully enough that I feel like I have some useful insights to share. While I also respect the stance and opinion of people who may differ with me on these points, but I still thought that that was important to say, that if we are not trying to exercise our muscle of empathy in this endeavor, then what on earth are we doing?
I want to shift gears a little bit and talk about this other essay you sent over. It's called What Makes a Traveling Man. This one was unique, and again, you did something that is not done a whole lot. And you also give some, I should say, hints and some clues that you are definitely, I get the feeling from reading this, you are definitely in a place where you think not only about the practical, not only about the philosophical, but you have some interest in the science, and you have some interest in what I might call the esoteric.
I'd say that's a pretty fair statement to assert.
And I think the way you do it here is very approachable. This is difficult to do. I'm going to name drop Patrick Day. Patrick Day wrote an article about the, I think it's called like the problem with the esotericists or something. Mm-hmm. I can't quite remember the name of the article, but it was brilliant in that he said, really the problem with us, the esotericist, is that a lot of times we're pompous. We can be pompous and arrogant about the things.
Okay, guilty in charge.
And in the same respect, those who are not into the esoteric tend to just think, like, all those guys are nuts, don't listen to them, they're stupid. And, of course, the truth is somewhere in the middle. Sometimes we go off the deep end. But in truth, what his call to us, the esotericist, was that, hey, we could be better at explaining things. And that always stuck with me. And I think not just explaining them, but carefully approaching topics like this, almost in the way you have in this particular piece, you talk about time travel as kind of a concept. You talk about memory, and you also talk about physics and the science. And so I think this is a really nice approach.
So I don't want to fall into the trap of being one of those guys who said, you know, almost whatever Wilson it was in Midnight in Paris, who always thinks that some past era was more golden than the one that we happen to be born in now. But I'm going to say this. There must have been something neat about the era of the natural philosophers when there was less of a stark division forcibly cast between the quote-unquote arts and the quote-unquote sciences, right? We used to just refer to the arts and sciences or the arts and mysteries. But, yeah, I mean, I think that it's okay to be enough of a generalist or a dilettante to let your mind wander over these topics and maybe weave them together, right? And if we're going to talk about traveling, we have a Masonic sense in which we mean it when we say, when we talk about the different places that we visit, right? I wasn't just going to my home lodge. Oh, no, I was traveling. Or we might talk about, you know, going through the years with the companions that we've grown so close with and so fond of as, yeah, I traveled with him for a good long time, right? But there's so many other ways to take these words and so many other ways that we mean them when we use them. And yeah, so I happen to weave in that notion of time travel. But are we talking literally about H.G. Wells' time travel where you hop into a machine? Or right. Are we talking about, or can we also be talking about this notion of how do we experience, perceive, and describe time? And that in itself is an exercise in time travel. So I felt compelled to include that in a survey of this notion of traveling.
It was great, because what I love is you're actually exploring intrinsic aspects of a lot of the concepts and words that we tend to think about. You're taking a real intellectual approach, and there's an etymological value here. You're asking people to think about the original meanings of words. And this is interesting, especially in the area of masonry, when we are called to journey, right? We're called to journey through the mind with things that pertain to either the allegory, the story, the facts, the chosen words, the poetry. What are we saying? And you're kind of bringing all this together. And I think it's a really great job. How many essays did you end up putting in the book?
All right. So how many are there? There's the 15 essays that appeared in various issues of Right Now, which is the magazine of the Scottish Rite Valley of Pittsburgh, from 2017 to 2021. These 15 essays, and then the presentation to the Squirrel Hill Historical Society. I should probably point out, for the benefit of the listener, that the presentation as it appears in this book is not precisely the way it was delivered to the Historical Society, which is captured on YouTube and can be Googled somewhere, but rather it's the full written notes that I had prepared for the presentation, and I will confess I committed the sin of overpreparing. So there's more content as it will be published in this book than I got to deliver to the society that evening.
Well, I mean, if it's going to be in a book, the more details, the better. It helps us all out. So good job. In terms of a release for this book, I want to let people know that on a personal level, I think this book was, in a world of Masonic books and things that I have read over the years, whether that is self-published content that is missing every single punctuation mark, or whether this is Albert Pike and his lack of periods and insane commas or whatever. I have to say the book is easy for me to read, which, and what I don't mean that in like, you know, it's a dummy's book. I'm a smart guy. I enjoyed reading this. It wasn't something that was like tedious to read. I found myself wanting to turn the page. I found myself understanding what you were putting in here in a clear vision. So I want to tell the listeners of the program that this is one of those books I really do think you'll get some value out of. If our listeners, you're out there listening, I would definitely pick this book up. Austin, when do you think we might be able to order the book?
Robert, you cannot see me through the computer right now, but I am blushing. I massively appreciate your assessment and your feedback. You are really too kind. So this is my first endeavor publishing a book, and so I was not as aware of the timeline and what is the ordinarily appropriate order to try to share this happy news with people and promote it. But as it stands right now, I simply need to review these proofs that I have been sent by the publisher and then give them the go-ahead. And I am told that somewhere within the 2 weeks or so following that, The book will become available for people to purchase. Now, where can people purchase it? They will be able to purchase it through both in online retail as well as brick and mortar. They will be able to get it through Amazon. They'll be able to get it through the Apple Bookstore. They'll be able to get it at Barnes & Noble. They'll be able to get it at Gardner's, at Google Play. They'll be able to get it at Baker & Taylor. So as far as the brick and mortar, Baker & Taylor, Barnes & Noble, there are various outlets and avenues for people to make their purchase.
This is great. I think it's really important to make sure we saturate the market with quality work. One of the things too, I know I'm happy that you're happy about what I have to say about the book, but I also have to say that I've been sent Masonic books before for review, and I've gotten two pages in and I had to put it down because they were so poorly edited that it made it actually difficult to understand. Not the case with this book at all. I have a real eye for it. I have to do a lot of editing all the time. And I just went through this and I thought, man, this is start to finish. Great content. Certainly, if you edited it yourself, kudos to you, whoever your editor was. High five for sure.
I should give a shout out to the folks who assisted me with this publishing. I know that there are various avenues a person can go, so I am not trying to necessarily say that this is the only route, but I worked with a small company called Gatekeeper Press, and they have been very pleasant to work with, very, very easy to work with. Folks doing the proofreading and editing were very professional, and we got our notes back and forth to each other in a fairly timely and professional manner. So I have enjoyed that experience for being a first time author. They were really gentle and helpful with me.
That's great to hear. Well, Brother Austin, I have to say it was an absolute pleasure to have you on. It was a lot of fun to read some excerpts from your book. I'm really looking forward to getting the entire thing. As soon as you release our links for that, we'll find it and we will share it all over the place. We'll make sure we get it out on all the social media channels and we'll put it in the show notes for this particular episode also. Thank you so much for taking the time. I mean, I know it's during the week and we all have day jobs, but it really makes the difference when brothers like yourself take the time to come on and talk a little bit about what you're doing.
Robert, thank you so much. I'm proud and happy with what I've put together. But separate and apart from that, it's an honor to appear on your program. I'll be happy to share those links with you as soon as those become available, and look forward to talking with you in the future.
Awesome. Thanks again.
Thank you, sir. Please take care.
All right. I hope you guys really enjoyed. Not going to do a tarot card draw this week. I think we want to focus on the author and what he had to say. And I think that is the focus for this week. Many thanks to Brother Austin one more time for coming on the show, taking some time out of his busy schedule to share with us some light and wisdom of this fraternity and, of course, in his neck of the woods. One more time, let's thank the fellows, contributors, producers, and legacy partners of the program for making this show possible. If you're curious how you can help the WCY podcast create content and take it to the next level, wherever that may be, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and see how you can help. Next week, we'll be back with the next segment of Whither Are We Traveling? We'll likely have an extra segment, and we'll get back to seeing the contemplative questions of a tarot card and how it may cross paths with the Masonic lessons. We'll talk to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.